If you want to learn more about the topics of today's episode, visit the podcast website at naturesecretservice.com. Thanks for listening. Okay, people, listen up. Here we go. This is not only Nature Secret Service, the podcast that puts you in the room with the men and women of wildlife law enforcement. It's also your favorite podcast. I'm Ed Newcomer, your host, and today our guest is Walter Duran. Walter's a former U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service special agent. He recently retired, but he has a long history in wildlife law enforcement. He worked in his law enforcement career. He worked for the National Park Service as a park ranger and for the U.S. Park Police in Washington, D.C. He was also a refuge officer, wildlife refuge officer for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and then later a wildlife officer when those titles changed. And one of his jobs while he was a federal wildlife officer is one of the kind of neatest jobs I think the Fish and Wildlife Service has had over the years, and that is he was a manatee officer, which means that he was in Florida, and as a uniformed officer, his sole duty was really to protect endangered manatees. Manatees take a real beating from people who operate boats in Florida waters in manatee zones at high speeds and don't follow the rules, and they hit manatees, and often those manatees are severely injured and die from their injuries. So we do have officers that devote nearly 100% of their time to protecting manatees down there and enforcing the boating regulations, which is, I think, a really important job and a really noble job. Walter eventually became a special agent with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and spent his time at the Miami field office and did some really incredible work. I'm super happy to have him on the show. Walter, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Ed. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me over and talk about this important conversation we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about migratory birds, which, as you know, Walter, anybody who's listening who works for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or did work knows that we spend a lot of time on migratory bird issues. Migratory Bird Treaty Act, of course, is one of the oldest wildlife laws in the United States. And all of us, regardless of where we are in the country, agents spend some time on migratory bird issues. Walter, one of the things, you know, I was an agent for 20 years in LA. I worked on a lot of bird cases. We investigated eagle poaching cases. I was involved in people who were killing hawks and falcons. I was involved in investigations about people smuggling live parrots across the border, which of course are not migratory birds, but endangered species. And I was involved in investigations of people smuggling songbirds from Southeast Asia into the United States. But the one thing I never saw a lot of was people trapping migratory birds that are native to the United States for commercial purposes. But you got into a really interesting investigation in Florida, where you discovered a whole industry or business or practice of people purposely going out trapping migratory birds native to the United States, protected by the MBTA, and commercializing them. And when I heard about this case, I was like, I had no idea this was going on in the United States. And I just was fascinated by it. And of course, I followed it closely. And I'm so happy you're here to talk about it. But first of all, can you just give us some background about why are people targeting migratory birds that are native to the United States for live capture to commercialize? Well, why are they doing it? And what are they using these birds for?
So it's mostly a culture thing, you know. It's with Hispanic people from Cuba, Mexico, and some Central American people, right? But it is to have these birds at home because of their colorations, their singing abilities, and for competition, right? But also it's important to know that this investigation that we're talking about, which is Operation Ordinary Birds, started back in 2012. Wow. And, okay, you know, it run from 2012 to 2024.
Wow. Okay.
And there were multiple facets of faces of it. Mm. So it was a very long investigation targeting the trapping of songbirds in the United States and trafficking of songbirds from Cuba. Here and I'm talking about here in the Miami area.
I see.
But also included Texas, Wisconsin, California, Arizona, Nevada, among Georgia and other states in the union.
It's incredible. I didn't know it went on that long. And like I said, I was surprised to hear about it. Interestingly, some of those cases I told you about where there were people smuggling songbirds in from Southeast Asia into the U.S., those were primarily Asians in the U.S. who were interested in having those birds alive for singing competitions. And I had never heard of these singing competitions before in my life. And honestly, I still don't totally understand how they work. I didn't know that U.S. native songbirds were being used for the same reason. But it's interesting. You mentioned that most of the targets are, in this case, or the people involved were Hispanic, right? Either
right.
Latin American, Central American. That's a little different than what I experienced with the Asian songbirds coming in. But interesting that it's also for singing competitions. Can you explain how these singing competitions work? I don't understand that. And how are they judged? And is there money involved?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is most crimes. Well, I shouldn't say most crimes. All crimes involve money. That's the driving force behind it. You know, you did this for 20 years. I did it for 26 years. Right.
Yeah.
And what drives people to do this is money. Punishment versus reward. Right. And so, you know, these people will get together, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people. They'll put all birds in their cages. And I'm talking about bird singing competitions in a cage, in a circle. And they'll make this bird sing until two end up just two singing. The other ones will not sing because they got tired or because just, I don't know why they stopped singing. And all these people are betting, you know, let's say an example, $250 per person. You have 50 people, you have thousands of dollars in that one singing competition, right?
Right.
And you have a judge or two that says, hey, you know, this bird is out because it's not singing loud enough or because it's not singing enough. Only these two are left and these two will go to the championship. You know, think about the NFL or the Major League Baseball, right?
Yeah.
The World Series, you know. And then they'll keep singing until one either doesn't sing anymore or doesn't sing enough melodies. Or this, you know, bird A sings the loudest and sings the most songs. The other thing they do is so they can have them at home so these birds can sing because of their coloration.
Uh-huh.
A perfect example of those birds would be the painted bunting.
Okay.
The indigo bunting, the blue grosbeak, and the rose-breasted grosbeak.
Okay.
Here in South Florida. Okay.
Right.
You know, there's other species that are targeted depending on the region of the United States. And, you know, like on the West Coast, you know, they target the house finches, the American goldfinches, lazuli buntings, which is specific to the West Coast.
Mm.
The lesser goldfinches also are targeted. So, and remember, all of these are federally protected because they are considered migratory birds.
Right. Right. They're all on the MBTA list. Yeah.
Correct. And then, you know, the simple possession, talking about reward versus punishment, simple possession is just a misdemeanor.
Right.
Where it gets into higher penalties, which would be a felony, is for the sale or barter or trade.
Right.
That means you sold it or you exchange it for something. So barter or trade, right?
Right, right.
Those birds, it's a felony.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, because most of the time when we deal with MBTA issues, Migratory Bird Treaty Act, yeah, the basic fine or penalty for catching one is a Class B misdemeanor. So I think it's maximum 6 months in jail and, what, a $15,000 fine, I think. But yeah, if you get into offering them for sale or selling them, it's a class D felony. So you go to jail for, I think, maximum 2 years. So pretty serious offense. Really interesting that they're targeting these species. How do they catch them? What are they using to catch these birds?
They use several methods, you know, in trapping these birds. And also depends on who's doing the trapping or catching, what region of the country they're doing it. But, you know, they use mist nets, glue sticks, traps. Sometimes they even will have a bait bird, right, that they will have at the house singing. They'll open their patio door and the bird will come in and they'll trap it, too. That's very rare because, remember, the bird is looking for that mate, right?
Right.
That is singing, or is looking for another friend that is singing somewhere and he's trying to figure out, looking for food and stuff like that. So it's very rare, but it does happen.
Interesting. And just so my listeners understand, if they're not familiar with some of these trapping devices, even though it's illegal to catch or trap migratory birds, there are birds that are legal to trap, you know, like pigeons and things like that. And then, of course, there are commercial traps available because there are scientists and people who are authorized to catch migratory birds alive for study purposes. So like mist nets is this common tool used by researchers. And it's basically a very thin, finely woven net, kind of like a fishing net, but it's hung up between trees. Birds can't see it. And it's hung in areas birds are likely to fly, and birds will fly into it and get tangled up. And then they can, it usually doesn't hurt them. It almost always doesn't hurt them, and they can be removed and studied and then released. Or if they're used for illegal purposes, obviously keep the bird. There's also like stationary boxes that are traps where a bird might go for food and drop through a trap door and get caught. You mentioned glue sticks. That one's surprising to me because the way glue sticks work, they can be used for rodents or birds, but basically it's a, you know, piece of flat cardboard with some very, very strong adhesive glue on it. It can be mounted horizontally or vertically. But once an animal touches it, they're stuck. And then the more they struggle, the more stuck they are. And man, I've seen birds stuck on glue traps, and it's usually really harms the bird trying to get them off. I'm surprised they use glue traps. Because I would think they would hurt the bird or at least tear the feathers off when they take it off, right?
Yeah, it causes a lot of damages on the feather.
Mm.
It causes a lot of damage to the bird, stresses the bird, but also leaves it open to predators, right?
Yeah, right.
Lack of food, lack of water, depending if the trapper doesn't come. You know, he might place the glue stick in the morning. He doesn't come until 6 in the evening to pick it up.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because the birds will start flying around that time. So they will come over and see if they got a bird in the glue stick or the trap or the mist net.
Yeah.
So, but from what I've seen, glue sticks are the most devastating ones because they take the feathers off when you're trying to remove the bird from the glue stick. It's just not good for the bird, per se. I would say it's cruelty.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, like you mentioned, if you're not monitoring your traps pretty regularly, your birds are going to be they're just vulnerable to predatory attack, or they might die from dehydration or stress or overheating, whatever. Yeah.
The other thing is like you have these traps with the false doors that they, you know, they land there and they drop into this compartment and door closes.
Right.
Oftentimes we'll find snakes.
Ooh.
That they were eating these birds. So
no
you find a snake there, and snake has a little bird in their belly, you know, that ate the birds.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It'd be easy for a snake to get through that trap door.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Easy. And that happens more often than you will think.
I bet, especially in Florida, right? Where there's a lot of reptiles. Yeah, interesting. You know, we're talking about migratory birds, and migratory bird populations have been generally declining over the last, you know, 50 years for a lot of reasons, but certainly this kind of pressure can't help. You know, why is this such a conservation concern for particular migratory birds, this activity? Can you explain that a little?
Well, because it targets a specific species, right?
Yeah.
You know, like the roast breast, the grosbeak.
Mm.
And on the Cuban culture, they call it descollado, right? Because it has this little like blood right here or rose color. And so they call it descollado. But so the population of this keeps declining by year.
Mm.
Studies done by the Audubon Society, it's just not good for those birds because they target the males.
Mm.
In order for these populations to, you know, flourish, one, we're cutting their habitat. Two, you know, all the buildings that are going up, so they crash against this those. But also all the high, big numbers. Sometimes you have people that have 250 of those birds.
Wow.
Now, and you think about, and some of them thousands of birds. So you go out and you have several hundred people catching every migratory bird season, you know, when they come from the north heading south and when they're heading north, I mean, heading from the south to the north.
Hmm.
So you have them being caught on both ends when they're coming down and when they're going up. So this bird is going to create a big issue when it comes to the balance of the ecosystem.
Right.
These birds are there for a reason.
Right.
Don't ask me why, but that they're there for a reason, right?
Yeah, they were here, so, we were, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I think it's a responsibility and for us to protect them. So that's why I love the job and the mission of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and, you know, working on the coverage, catching these people and talking about reward versus punishment, you know, maximum 5 years, 100,000 fine. So they figure the reward and balance. And you know, how many agents does the Fish and Wildlife Service have?
Yeah, shockingly few compared to other federal agencies, that's for sure. And the compared to our broad mission, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
And compared to how serious wildlife trafficking is around the world, yeah. We have very few.
Indeed. But they also, the good thing is that, you know, you doing your many years in the service of this country and in protecting the wildlife and the environment of the country, not only here in the United States, but abroad.
Mm.
We garner some good partnerships with the state,
mm-hmm.
our state officers, county and city, but also our other federal partners that help us out.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, be able to accomplish. Our maximum number allowed of agents for Fish and Wildlife Service is 250.
Right.
So, right. It's, you got to look at it. You got to find ways and ways to be able to garner support from everybody around you.
Yeah. I think during my career, I remember maybe only a year or two out of my whole career where we were fully staffed. I mean, usually we're understaffed. And right now I think we're grossly understaffed. You know, the back to the migratory nature of these birds and the impact, and you said they're targeting primarily males for their singing ability. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But, you know, just for listeners' kind of sense of orientation, you know, these birds can travel thousands of miles over a year, moving great distances, not just across states, but across international borders. Some of them go as far as South America during the winter, and then for the summer, they come up as far as the Arctic in Canada. And so, you know, having any point along that migratory route where you're taking significant numbers of birds out can have dramatic impact on their ability to breed, feed, you know, do whatever they need to do once they get to their final destinations. You know, if you're taking out a lot of males in Florida and all of a sudden those males don't show up at the nesting sites in the north, could devastate the population and ruin their nesting season for that year. Visually, for my listeners, if you just Google migratory bird flyways, you will see the United States is kind of divided into a number of different flyways. You have like the Pacific Flyway, the Central Flyway, and these are like general migratory routes through North America. It's kind of interesting to see, just kind of give you a picture for how these birds travel and how poachers might specifically, you know about those flyways and target birds during the right time of the year. With regard to the singing, this competition stuff's really interesting to me, Walter, because it's really capitalizing on natural behavior, right? In the wild, these males would sing to each other And in the presence of females, and presumably the strongest singer would be the most likely to mate with females, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's correct. And the one that has the most color.
Yeah. Right? Coloration, yes. And so these guys are specifically targeting, I mean, I assume the strongest singers would be most valuable to them in these competitions. So they're taking out the strongest birds. That's what they're looking for anyway, right?
Yeah. And, you know, depending on how strong of a singer that bird is, the value of that bird.
Right.
You go into hundreds of dollars to thousands of dollars.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll be buying birds for 100 in an undercover capacity for, you know, anywhere from $50 to $1,000.
Crazy.
Per bird.
Yeah. So they have double value. They have value in that they get sold to people who want to compete with them, but then they also have value in the betting process, right? There's multiple ways people make money on them.
Correct. Correct. I mean, just think about it. You have the most colorful rose-breasted grosbeak,
right?
And you have the strongest singing bird in Miami, per se.
Mm-hmm.
That bird is going to cost thousands of dollars when you sell it. And just think about, you have a few of those, you know, let's say you have 15 of those that are very strong because you trained them. You got them accustomed to the cage, you know, for the singing competitions that you face them off and they won't stop singing. Then that bird has double the value, like you said.
Right.
The color, the singing abilities, and the ability for that bird to sing in a competition.
That's amazing. And you said they don't, it's not like they're just targeting one or two birds. Some of these guys will go out and catch, they'll have hundreds, right? Or more than 100.
I mean, they will have cages, like large cages, like you see this door right here.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a full-size room full of birds.
Wow.
You could walk into this aviary, it'll be full of birds. Not everybody has that, but most of them have anywhere between 25 birds to 40 birds.
Yeah. So you talk, these groups can have a significant impact on populations and breeding success rates by taking these birds out during the migratory season, right?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, just think about it. You know, they're coming down from north, from Canada or, you know, northeast, and these birds are flying. They're not being only targeted in the Carolinas, Georgia, North Florida, Central Florida, but South Florida, on the way down. And the same thing as they're going up north right, when summer is in the north, because they will come down for the cold months because they will freeze in the north. So they'll come down south. They'll fly to South America, Central America, but a lot of Cuba, you know, the Caribbean. And then they'll come back, you know, the juveniles will come back. They're just beginning to get their color.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're being trapped here in South Florida, Central Florida, North Florida, and so up north, you know,
All the way up the flyway. That's a very important point because Agent Dirk Hoy and I experienced the same thing when we did Operation High Roller, which was people killing hawks and falcons to protect their pigeons. And that was the problem, is as hawks and falcons made their way up the Pacific Flyway, in every city, there were these pigeon people who killed them. So it's not like they just, in your case, it's not like they just get trapped in Florida. They get trapped in the next state and the next state and the next state, all the way up the flyway. So the whole time they're trying to migrate, their populations are being cut down by various causes. But one of them are these people that are trapping and illegally poaching these birds, which is really insidious. So let's talk about your case now a little bit. So you and I both said we had no idea this was really going on, right? We didn't know about these singing competitions. How did you figure it out? How did it come to your attention? And how did you get involved in like an actual investigation of these guys? Give us the background there.
So, you know, Operation Ordinary Bird started in 2012.
Okay.
By predecessors of mine. Like Dave Hubbard.
Dave Hubbard in Miami.
Dave, Pharaoh, Fernando Gatorno, Elvin Monge, that they had this investigation. As it's, you know, as people move on, it was passed down to this people that I just mentioned, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, they had investigations going on with the state of Florida. And, you know, I came in, I'm a Hispanic, born in Latin America. And my first language is Spanish.
Right.
So I was like a fit in because I spoke the language, I understood the culture, I understood everything, right? So they asked me to work undercover, doing undercover buys or buy bus, right?
Oh, yeah, perfect.
You can see my little parrot thing there. You had mentioned.
It's like very, stay with the theme. Very good. He's wearing, wearing a shirt that has a parrot on it. That's nice.
Indeed. Well, macaw.
So it's a macaw. Oh, yeah, it is a macaw. You're right.
So, you know, I got involved in this and I started working and I liked it because I was making an impact on this investigation, right? An impact on preserving, protecting this migratory birds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you and I were the voice of wildlife because they had no voice, right?
Right.
And so I think I told you this earlier. How many Americans know about this wildlife trafficking going on? You know, not only migratory birds, but other species, sea turtles, you know, hawksbill sea turtles, eggs being, you know, dug out at the beach, or, you know, totoaba being, you know, that is being pushed to the extinct.
Oh, yeah. The point of extinction. On and on. Corals, sea cucumbers.
But how many Americans?
Yeah.
How many of our countrymen and women know about this? I didn't know, you didn't know until we got into this. So I think this program that you're doing is awesome because it could have an impact and could educate the American public because, you know, we need to do that, right? So, you know, I got into this, start working it, you know, like I said, Spanish is my first language and I understood a lot of what was going on. So, you know, it'll be hard for me to go try to infiltrate a trafficking network that speak Mandarin. It's hard, right? But I'm going to chew in with the Spanish.
Yeah. You know,
people that speak Spanish. So I got in and I started doing undercover buys with the assistance of all the team here in Miami. But not only Miami, but also in Texas, Nevada, California, Wisconsin, and abroad. You know, I even had the help of Customs and Border Protection, the state of Florida, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, postal inspectors, Homeland Security investigations. It's a great team effort to be able to accomplish the mission. As I mentioned earlier, it's only 250 agents maximum.
Right.
My entire career, maybe we had 200 agents. And then to be able to have attachés across the world and plus people here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that includes management, not just level agents, right?
Exactly.
So it was awesome to be able to target this, to get undercover, work undercover, direct and manage undercover operations to do this. Johnny Ryder was a great partner to work with and was the lead agent for Operation Honor Birds the latter years of from 2021 to 24.
Okay.
Or 23, should I say, where we got something like 30 people.
Wow.
That we charged and arrested and approximately, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Alexander Coolin, he's awesome. He used to work for CBP. Now he's a special agent with us. He used to work for Customs and Border Protection. He, you know, helped me find people that are advertising online. They post this. Right? I know you didn't ask me, but I want to let you know.
Ask you, how do you find these people? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they advertise on Facebook. Craigslist. Or other websites, you know, and they create their own little chat rooms and call a certain name of a bird or a code word for it.
Yeah.
Like Descollados in Miami, you know, which is the rose-breasted grosbeak, right? Or right. Mariposa, which would be the painted buntings, right? Or Azulejo, which is the indigo bunting, or Azulejon, which is the blue grosbeak. And, you know, they'll advertise this $250, $50, you know, $700 for this bird, $1,000 for this bird.
Right.
And then, you know, you just make contact and start communicating. One thing you have to be careful is they're always looking out.
Yeah.
Because they know.
Yeah.
They know you're looking. You, I mean, Ed as a, and Walter as a special agent working in undercover capacity, or the state officers are looking at them.
Yeah.
Because we have a unique niche, right?
Right.
You know, we are the experts in wildlife trafficking and investigations.
Right.
So, you know, just like the Secret Service's specialty is protecting the president and, you know, counterfeit money, right?
Yep.
And the marshals is fugitives and people. So we, the Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Law Enforcement, is wildlife trafficking.
Right.
You know, with the partnerships worldwide, but here in the United States domestically.
Yeah.
Targeting this trafficking of wildlife. So
they
do some awesome work and take down some a large amount of people. You know, this investigation had like 150 people alone.
Across the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Across the country, not just here in South Florida, but like I said, Arizona, Texas, California, Nevada, Wisconsin, Puerto Rico, and Georgia, and throughout Florida.
You mentioned, you know, you'd find their offers for sale online, and, you know, imagine every single one of those offers, just putting it up online, offering to sell a migratory bird, that in and of itself is a felony. But how did you mentioned they were a little bit, you know, they knew what they were doing was illegal. Did you ever get questioned by them, or how did you get yourself in undercover and start buying birds? And did you go to any fights or competitions, the singing competitions?
So
it's a lot of questions.
You know, you contact them, right?
Yeah.
You contact them on Facebook and they will ask you questions like, where do you live? What do you do? And they try to catch you in a lie, right?
Yep.
Because they're very skittish about, you know, selling to people that they don't know, new customer, right?
Yeah.
But remember, greed will get the fish. Greed will get the criminal. You know, you as an undercover agent or working undercover, you have to know what you're talking about.
Right.
If you don't know what you're talking about, you're going to get caught.
Right.
So you have to study the species and know the background about birds, know about where this birds migrate, where this birds mostly at, because I think I mentioned earlier, there's some species that are only to the western side of the country, the United right. States, some on the eastern side of the country.
Right.
And some on the central, right?
Yep.
And so you have to know about this, and you kind of have to know their nicknames of this birds that they use for it.
Yeah, the code words you mentioned. Yeah.
Right.
So they're not out there actually saying, you know, house finch or, you know, painted bunting. They're using code words so that maybe it's a little harder for law enforcement to pick up on it, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you showed up, hey, can you sell me a Passerina cyanea?
Yeah.
This guy is a biologist or some cop. So get out of here. We don't want to deal with you.
Right.
And
right.
There's the risk of working undercover because, you know, you're going by yourself.
Yeah.
You might have a gun. You might not have a gun.
Yeah.
When you go and do this undercover buys. And if they discover that you're a cop, they suspect that you're a cop. I mean, it might kill you. It hurt you, right?
Yeah, it go bad very quickly. Yeah.
Very, very bad. So, yeah. You know, you have to have a plan for that. So that's how I was able to get in because of my skills, Spanish.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing the culture, mm-hmm. background, knowing the nicknames of the birds and, you know, all the history about birds, where they fly.
Right.
Where they're mostly trapped. You know that most of this stuff happens in Cuba.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned the Cuban connection. What's the connection with Cuba?
So they, you know, you could look it up on YouTube and, you know, bird competitions in Cuba, right? And you find videos about, you know, indigo buntings, painted buntings, rose-breasted grosbeak, you know, a bunch of people, you know, in a park or somewhere or in a house having these competitions. But supposedly the best birds, the most trained, the most colorful come from Cuba. So they traffic it. They traffic those birds, and those birds garnish thousands of dollars.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So they'll give them Tylenol or something that will put them to sleep. They put them on hair rollers or in a sock and conceal them in their body or in a bag. And, you know, the flight from Cuba is what, 45 minutes, 30 minutes to Miami. And, you know, in hopes that they go by customs and border protection and they don't get detected. We caught a few people in at the Miami International Airport or Fort Lauderdale, even Tampa and Fort Myers.
No kidding.
Airports, yeah.
And that's a much more serious offense once they do that. That's a smuggling charge, which is a much more serious felony.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, okay, so there's Cuban Americans involved. There's a demand for the birds that come out of Cuba because they're more prized. And then there's this heavy, you know, impact on migratory birds within the United States, the continental U.S. as well. It must have been kind of rewarding to be getting in there and knowing you were making a difference, but also like a little bit like, oh my gosh, what's going on, right? The more you learn, the more kind of horrified you get. Talk to us a little bit about like how many buys did you make and how did you decide when you're going to charge somebody, right? Like how long did you go on with making undercover contacts with people before you kind of said, okay, this is enough killing or not killing, but catching birds. We got to take this case down.
So, you know, you start buying from these people and, you know, you're always in coordination with the U.S. Attorney's Office, which is the prosecutor for the federal government, right? The AUSAs, Assistant United States Attorneys. And you're in coordination with them and then you say, hey, look, this individual is selling these birds. And they give you specifics, right? That, you know, you got to prove certain elements of the crime. Once you have proven those certain elements of the crime, then it will be the prosecutor that decides when to go and take this individual down. But sometimes you not just take one individual down, you have to wait and take out the whole network out. So you infiltrate the network, right? And yes, some birds are lost, but you look at the overall, what is that you accomplish? You want to accomplish just giving someone a ticket or taking the entire network down. Mm-hmm. And the goal of any undercover operation is to have an impact on what's going to happen in the future.
Yes.
So people take notice and say, well, you know, hey, this could be an undercover agent from the Fish and Wildlife Service or from the state of Florida or from whatever state, right, that is coming after us. So our goal is to stop the trapping, the trafficking, and the cruelty to these animals, these birds, right?
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
And so you always have to coordinate and work with not just the U.S. Attorney's Office, but your counterpart, the city, the county, the state, and your other federal counterpart, about when is the proper time and the right time to take these people down.
It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? And we all faced it as investigators at some point in our careers where, like you said, if you just take the case down on the very first person you catch, if you have a kind of a systemic problem where you've got people commercializing wildlife. If you just catch that first person and you charge them with the very first offense they commit, you're really not addressing the big problem, right? You're just, you know, punishing one person. They get probably a minimal fine because it's one incident. And the rest of the community is like, Too bad that sucker got caught. You know, I won't get caught. It's really, really important to take down the whole network or as many people as you can, or at least the most important players, because, well, first of all, they get a harsher penalty if you document that they are engaged in this in a systemic way. Second, you catch multiple people, everybody, you know, there's more of a deterrent because everybody's aware, like, oh shit, they are organized, right? And then, you know, thirdly, it gets the media's attention and it gets the U.S. Attorney's Office attention when you have multiple people involved in ongoing criminal activity. And that's the way you ultimately deter. But for us as investigators, you always end up in this moment where it's like, oh my gosh, I'm documenting violations. And when do I take it down? Right. It's like, sometimes it's just like, I don't know. Is it time? Is it not time? And it does take a little bit of a group effort, and it does take, I guess, you know what? Some, I hate to say balls, but sometimes you just have to say, this is it. I'm taking it down. And yeah, we're not going to get everybody in the group, but we're going to get the big players, right?
Yeah. And not only does it take that, what you just explained, but also takes resources.
Yeah.
Right. Money to do on the undercover buys,
right?
Setting up sting operations, setting up, you know, fake businesses. It just takes a whole approach and the support of management, right?
Right.
But you know, management can support you all they can, but if the U.S. Attorney's Office is not arrested, you really have no case.
Yeah,
because they're the ones that are going to prosecute.
Right.
You know, we were fortunate here in South Florida that we have Thomas Watts Ruggiero and the Environmental Crimes Unit here that were very aggressive in prosecuting, but also they have their limitations too, you know?
Sure.
So yeah,
you're lucky. If Miami had a fantastic U.S. attorney, he recently retired, Tom Watts Fitzgerald, fantastic, well-known across the country as being aggressive and supporting U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We were lucky in L.A. too. We had an environmental crimes unit within the local U.S. Attorney's Office, and we always had really fantastic prosecutors who supported our cases. It's not always true around the country. Sometimes our agents are just going in and taking their cases to the general criminal division, and you know, they're competing with cases from the FBI and Secret Service and ATF. You know, sometimes it's hard to get U.S. attorneys interested in a wildlife case. But this case, you know, I wanted to ask you, did you ever go to one of these singing competitions?
I didn't specifically. I will take my birds to a specific subject that I have befriended. And Armando Spino, right? He was a well-known big fish in South Florida with trapping and selling these birds.
Okay.
And he had some pretty good birds, singing birds and colorful birds. But he also had a bunch of birds that were not taken care of, you know. And that's what I wanted to stop, right?
Yeah.
You know, not only the trapping and trafficking, but the cruelty to these animals.
Yeah. Right?
That was taking place. And, you know, I would go and bring my bird and have a singing competition with the CSO because I was training my bird to go to the singing competition. So, and you know, we don't only just have one case going on. We have several cases.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to earlier, it takes dedication. You know, I'll be working 18-hour days, 16-hour days, 12-hour days to be able to get this case going.
Yeah.
But not just me, but also my other coworkers.
Yeah.
That going on, you know?
Plus, you know, after you have a meeting, an undercover meeting, you got to go home and make a special report about that particular meeting, and you got to transcribe all those recordings, especially if some of them are in Spanish. You got to translate them, right? That's a lot of work.
Oh man, I'll tell you. I mean, a 30-minute recording will take 8 hours to translate.
Yeah, totally. It's doing undercover can be a nightmare. Yeah,
because of the money issues, the fun issues, we have to do it ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's rare that we get hire people to do our translations or anyway. So you raised an interesting point, and that is, what was this guy's name? You said was it Armando? What was
his name? Armando Spino.
Yeah.
And the other one was Laredo, Alejandro Laredo. And there was another guy they call El Doctor, the doctor in South Florida. And you have Alain Armando Guevara, who were probably the biggest ones around South Florida. They were doing all this trapping and stuff. And you probably find news articles if you do a search on them on Google or on the internet about it. They got taken down, and Laredo even crucified a bird. And you could probably see that. I mean, literally crucified, put her in a cross.
What?
Yeah, and crucify a bird that was eating his bird.
So he targeted like a hawk or something like that, huh?
Yeah, I forgot the exact bird.
He tortured it to death, basically.
Yeah, he tortured it. And, you know, he recorded and posted online.
Jeez Louise. Why? Oh, my God, that's awful. But, yeah. But it doesn't surprise me, honestly. I saw it with the pigeon fanciers out here in California. They hated hawks and falcons. They hated predatory birds. And they sometimes tortured them, and it was not pleasant. That's insidious. But you raise an interesting point with this Armando guy and the others, these major players who were trapping a lot of birds. You mentioned that, you know, some of the birds were kept in cruel conditions or didn't survive. And I'm betting, can tell me if I'm wrong, the birds that were not treated well were not the strong singers, right?
No.
I mean, what this illustrates is that these people, and this is critical, as you mentioned, you know, part of the purpose of this podcast is to help educate people about what's going on out there. And it is critical for people to understand that these people you were after, you were infiltrating, and that you ultimately caught, they're not bird lovers, right? They view these birds as a commodity in a commercial way. They're catching these birds, and they're keeping these birds and caring for them only so far as these birds make money for them.
It's a commercial transaction, is a money generating source. And they don't care about these birds. They will tell you, oh no, it's our tradition, it's our customs. They don't care about these birds. I mean, I learned that during my undercover operations. I mean, they hold these birds and, you know, hardly any feathers on these birds, you know, like you pluck all the feathers from a bird, and, you know, these birds are living a horrible life.
Yeah.
But yeah, they will tell you, oh, you know, it's a culture. We're taking care of these birds. We're saving it because their numbers are going down. The population's going down. So we're saving it by trapping them. And well, those birds they don't live long in captivity. Number two, they don't reproduce, right? In captivity. Mm-hmm. And why? It's because most of them were males. I'm not going to tell you there were no females, but most of them were males because they're the most colorful ones and the strongest singers.
Right. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times I heard that after somebody was arrested, they'd get in front of a judge and they'd try to portray themselves as some sort of a bird lover or conservationist who just kind of, you know, went a little too far. It's total bullshit.
I mean, you and I know that, but that's why I said this program is important. You know, I wish there were more like this, because then the American public knows about this, right? I could say it now that I'm no longer there, but, you know, I think the Fish and Wildlife Service should do a better job in educating the American public.
Yes.
On what's happening with wildlife trafficking. As you know, it's either the third or fourth most lucrative illegal business in the world.
Right.
Right. And, you know, to be in third or fourth it has to be big. But, you know, the wildlife trafficking is not just wildlife trafficking. It's connected with arms, with drugs, with the cartels. You know, it's a method now that the Mexican cartels were using wildlife to pay for the precursors for fentanyl. Chinese. So I don't know if you're aware of that, but
I think I'd heard that. I knew that, you know, the cartels were implicated in Tatuaba trafficking in particular. But and you know, that's not just in the U.S. You mentioned Mexico as well, you know, organized crime is also involved in wildlife trafficking in Africa. And, you know, there's a lot of drugs involved in as well. We could go on and on about that. But, you know, this was a great case. How many, you mentioned there were hundreds of people that, you know, it wasn't just you that was involved in investigation. There was investigation going on in other states and other agents kind of leading those, but Operation Ornery Birds was kind of an all encompassing thing for a while. How many people ultimately got scooped up in the takedown and how did that go?
So there were multiple takedowns, but in total, it was about approximately 40 to 45 people that we took down.
Nice.
Now, remember this, 2012 to 2024.
Yeah. Right? It's a long time, but, you know, and we'd have to go into the details about how investigations work to kind of understand that. But sometimes these longer investigations where it's hard to get in or infiltrate, they kind of go in peaks and valleys, right? You might be succeeding for a while and then the case kind of goes dormant for a while because you're just not making any progress. So it's not like, you know, 10 years constantly working on it. Probably there were some peaks and valleys. And then when they finally kind of got on it at the last, it was really going hard, right?
And remember, there's migration seasons, right?
Yeah, right.
Which That's lasts, right. no, two, a month or a month and a half.
Right.
So you have these migration seasons. Well, this is the migration season stops, then work stops, right?
Yeah, less trapping, right?
Yeah, less trapping. Always trapping going on, but less trapping, less cases.
Yeah.
And then you have to catch up with all the other paperwork that you have to do. As you know, undercover work creates a huge number of paperwork, a huge amount of paperwork.
Yep.
And, you know, you have to get approvals and you have to coordinate all this. So it is a complex, very complex investigation per se.
Plus, of course, you got other cases you're working on too, because being a small agency, it's not like very few agents can devote all their time to one case. They have to work other things as well.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And then you have to keep in contact with these individuals too.
Right. You have to keep the relationship going, right?
Right. You have to keep this relationship, because if you don't, then you become a stranger.
Yeah.
So you know, you have to sometimes go to their house. You got to go and have a cup of coffee. And you got to pay for that. You're not, you know, the government is going to pay for that. So you got to use your own money to do these things. Like, hey, I just want to have a cup of coffee with you, see how you're doing. And, you know, the bad guys appreciate that, just like anybody else does.
They do. Right? Yeah. Relationships.
So like, oh, yeah. This guy is great, man. He's no cop.
Did you have any problem? Sometimes we've had people on the show have talked about how they actually got to kind of like some of the people that they worked undercover. I certainly had that happen to me. Did you have any issues like that? I mean, obviously you're a professional, so you're going to take them down regardless. But did you ever have any situations like that where you're like, oh, I hate this guy and I'm struggling to pretend to be his friend, or I actually kind of like this guy and I wish he wasn't a criminal?
I mean, Armando Espino was a real nice guy.
Hmm.
Family man, but you always have to keep, you know, the professional thing is like your job is to make sure you meet all those elements and that this individual gets prosecuted, because he's having such a big impact on the trafficking of wildlife, right? Mm-hmm. But also, you know, I had an individual that was like way old and I was like, it reminds me of my grandfather. And I mean, I feel bad for him, but he has to go to jail.
Yeah. There's always somebody you feel a little sorry for, right? The target.
Right.
So do you feel like you had an impact in protecting the species through these cases?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, thanks to the support and, you know, learning about this, I think we have a huge impact on the trafficking and trapping of songbirds and in the United States as a whole, you know. Operation Texas Melody, it was a spinoff of Operation Ordinary Birds. The Houston Zoo has an area just for songbirds.
Wow. That came from this case or that
from
case?
The Operation Texas Melody that I did a bunch of undercover buys over there. Once again, because my Spanish.
Right.
You're not going to send in a newcomer to buy from a Cuban or a Mexican or a Salvadoran, you know.
Definitely. They would be a little suspicious. Was Operation, what'd you call it, Texas Melody, was that Agent Snodgrass's case?
Yes. A wonderful and very talented agent. I could tell you that. I really enjoy working with him, just like I didn't enjoy working with agent Victor Peñalosa and who was here in Miami, and Alexander Kulin. Yeah. It's just, you know, those people that really inspire you to go work and work harder. And it's like, you really want to make the case and you really want to do a huge impact, because these people were so dedicated, right?
Yeah.
They were cops, but they were also loved the mission of the Fish and Wildlife Service of protecting the wildlife and make sure that it's here for future generations' enjoyment, you know?
100%. I've always said, Walter, I'm sure you agree, and you're one of them. You know, I've never met, you know, on the whole, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agents are among, I think, the best educated, the best trained, and the most tenacious federal agents. And woe be any criminal who comes up against one, because you're going to lose. You will lose in the long run.
The dedication that you have, you know,
yeah.
It's the dedication and the passion and the belief in that you really are making an impact, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this wildlife doesn't choose to be trapped, doesn't choose to be, what you call it, receive cruelty.
Right.
And to be, do horrible things to it. But, you know, you as an agent, you see it as, hey, I'm not only protecting this wildlife, but I'm protecting the ecosystem.
Yes.
Of, not just here in the United States, but abroad.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned Asia, right?
Yep.
Africa, all of Latin America. You know, this bird traveled through thousands of miles overseas to go. One little bird, you know, stops at a national wildlife refuge, breeds, rests, and then it takes off.
Yeah,
it's just amazing, you know?
It is. Well, you know what? I've always said, you know, if you commit a wildlife crime, a federal wildlife crime, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service special agent will pursue you. They will catch you and they will put you in jail. It's just a matter of time. Walter, what I'm going to do is I will put some documents and some photographs up on the Nature Secret Service webpage. So if people are interested in learning more about the types of birds that were involved in your case, or actually reading some of the case documents that I'll pull off of PACER, they're welcome to go do that. I really appreciate your time. This has been kind of an eye-opening discussion about the exploitation of native migratory birds in the United States, something even as an agent, I didn't know what was going on. And I'm so happy that you and other agents took this on and tackled it and saw it through to the end and took these guys down. So great job. Thank you so much. And thank you for coming on the program to tell us the story.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, just like it was a pleasure working with you, you know, while we were working, right? But just to be able to relay the message to the American public, you know, that this is happening and that is a serious thing going on. So thank you for having this, and thank you for, you know, your service in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Thank you, Walter. Same to you. It was always a pleasure. We were on opposite sides of the country, but we ran into each other at training and different times. And I always enjoyed talking to you. I knew I could see in your eyes, you had the fire like I did. It doesn't happen without a team effort, right?
There you go. That's the key word, team.
Team effort. Exactly. What is it? Agent Glenn Yeck always says, one team, one fight, right?
Yes, indeed. Good old Glenn.
Yeah. All right, Walter, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. We'll have you back again, and I know you and I'll stay in touch. For everybody else, we'll see you next time.
Nature Secret Service is written and produced by me, Ed Newcomer, and is co-produced by the DHTV team here at California State University, Dominguez Hills. Follow us on social media and connect with us online at naturesecretservice.com.